5 minutes after the hour. Good morning. I can say it now because Bill Zimfer's not listening. Tuesday on the morning show with Preston Scott. September the 29th, show number 4334. It is Debate Tuesday. President taking on Joe Biden. And all will be without teleprompters. This will be interesting. There is every reason to believe Joe Biden's been handling all Q&As lately with a teleprompter. Flashing up answers in front of him, and so we'll see how this all goes. I will tell you now, I will not be watching live. I will be asleep. I will come in early tomorrow morning and listen to segments of the debate that I think are worth listening to. Debates, I don't know who they're for. I guess there are some undecideds. I don't know how there really can be, but I guess there are. So we'll talk more about that today. That's the big story in the press box, the debate. We'll put a little historical context to it. Proverbs 35 and 6, every word of God is flawless. He is a shield to those who take refuge in him. Do not add to his words, or he will rebuke you and prove you a liar. One of the biggest mistakes, you know, I was a youth pastor for many, 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 many years, and that went from middle school to college. That was my group, college career. So young professionals up to late 20s and on back. And one of the first things that I tried to do was to get parents to understand a few things about being a parent of teenagers or preteens. Don't try to make Scripture say what you want it to say. It says what it says. I'll give you a very contemporary example of what I'm talking about. There are a lot of parents out there that want to tell young people that drinking is a sin. No, drinking's not a sin. It's a sin if you're not of age. If you're below the age of 21, the law sets an age. If you're below that age, that's wrong. You're breaking the law. You shouldn't do that. And beyond that, you shouldn't get drunk, but having a drink or two, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing at all. And here's the danger. The danger is when you start telling your kids, well, according to God, blah, 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 X, Y, Z, and that isn't what God's word says, they start to question everything about God. That's a bad thing. So be honest about what Scripture says. Don't add to it. Don't take away from it. It says what it says. And we have another issue in today's church, and that is we have a lot of pastors that are preaching things that are not scripturally accurate, even though the Bible warns of it. It's so funny to me how we have pastors that are preaching things that, you know, it, for example, that the move of the last several years that you see in pop culture is, well, Jesus said to love everybody. He did. But he also said, don't sin anymore. You know, Jesus said, judge not, lest. No, that isn't exactly what Jesus was talking about eternity. It's not my place to judge eternity for anybody. That's between them and God. It is my place if someone says I'm a Christian and I see them fooling around on their spouse, it's my place to go to them and say, what are you doing? What are you doing? It is my place if a guy's, you know, married and he's got an addiction to porn and I find out about it, it's my place to go to him and say, come on, man, you can do better than that. Let's talk about this. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. Loving someone sometimes means saying, hey, we got to do better than this. Because if you truly do love somebody, you care enough to speak into their life. So anyway, there's your verse of the day. That's where we'll start. Remember, it's all about sending your kids out the door to school with something encouraging. Don't yell and scream at them. They didn't get their homework done. Deal with that later. Get them started their day on a good note. Not stressed out because mom and dad yelled at them. 10 minutes after the hour. We are just starting up here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
I am fair. I am good. I'm a happy example.
Glenn is on 9 to noon.
I am stronger every day.
On WFLA.
Those of you on Facebook Live, you are looking live. Barry College, one of the bald eagles in the nest. In the wee hours of the morning. Just surveying the nest. What shall I do to remodel for this season? Stoically, braving the breeze, looking ever bit the eagle. That is our iconic symbol. When the camera goes from infrared, or, you know, right now you're getting basically a black and white image. There are no spotlights shining. There, none of that. That's strictly the camera's technology picking up. And it's pretty remarkable stuff, to be honest with you. But when the sun comes up and it goes full color, hopefully we'll have one or both of the eagles back in the nest. It'll be a lot of fun. So that's one of our break shots through the season of the Eagles. We'll be flipping back and forth with that one. The American Patriots Almanac. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Because in case you don't know this backstory, I'm going to give you a backstory here in a second. On the night of September 29th, 1780. So you have some context. 1780. Militia loyal to King George III were camped on Black Mingo Creek in coastal South Carolina when suddenly a Patriot force materialized out of the steamy darkness with guns blazing. The surprised Tories put up a sharp defense, but soon fled across the Santee River. Clue? There's a clue. Leaving behind their supplies and ammunition, Francis Marion had struck again. One of the heroes of the American Revolution, Marion was a short, quiet man, wore swords so seldom it was rusted in its scabbard. His men knew the secret paths of the low country swamps, and like phantoms, they could appear out of the cypress mazes for quick surprise attacks against much larger forces before melting away into the darkness of their forest retreats. Most were farmers fighting without pay. Few had uniforms of any kind. They were always short on guns, ammunition, and food, but they fought with the zeal of true patriots. Marion's guerrilla warfare kept the British in a constant state of confusion and alarm. With grudging respect, the Redcoats began to refer to him as the Swamp Fox. It is said that one day, Marion invited a British officer to dinner in his camp under the flag of truce and served a meal of fire-baked potatoes on a slab of bark with vinegar and water to wash it down. His guest was surprised at how little the Patriots had to eat. "But surely, General," he inquired, "this can't be your usual fare." "Indeed it is, sir," Marion replied. "We are fortunate on this occasion, entertaining company, to have more than our usual allowance." Story goes that the British officer was so overcome by the Americans' determination and sacrifice that he resigned his commission and sailed back to England.
Wow.
Where does that sound familiar? That is part of the inspiration to the movie The Patriot. The story of Francis Marion. Every part of the movie The Patriot. Yes, Cornwallis is there, brilliantly played, by the way, by Tom Wilkinson, as he is brilliant in every movie he is
yes,
in.
Yes, he is.
But the Mel Gibson character is a compilation, but the main source of that is Francis Marion. Did you hear the Santee River? That's in the movie The Patriot. I mean, there are so many little things. The surprise attacks. The sitting down with the other side. I mean, it was all drawn from this story, this account, and the accounts of Francis Marion. And then they just grabbed a few little things here and there. Tavington, the guy who was in charge of the British Dragoons in the movie, Another one based on history. There was a really bad dude that handled the dragoons for the British. I think his name was Tarlington. And we've talked about him at different times in our history segments. So anyway, just a little backstory there for the movie The Patriot. Yes, I'm going to go watch it again. 16 minutes after the hour, it's the morning show.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
And free.
And iHeart's radio station.
I got to tell you, I would probably have a tough time working in a sub shop. I'm looking at this story here. A forum on Ask Reddit, they went ahead and asked sandwich artists from Subway to submit the strangest orders they've ever fulfilled. So just kind of think through what's on that line.
I have a weird question. Why are people that make coffee behind the counter called baristas and people that make sandwiches not? I mean, wouldn't they be like sandwichistas or some weird,
I bet they are somewhere.
I'm sorry, random thought, but I've just wondered that forever. I don't know where the word barista came from.
I know that a Sandinista is not necessarily a good thing. So, I don't know. So, I started looking through these sandwiches that these people have been asked to make, and I got to thinking to myself, could I do that? Could I make that sandwich? And I know the answer is you have to, because that's what the customer is ordering. But just sit back for a second and listen to some of these orders. Used to have a guy come in, order a footlong on white, double mayo, salt and pepper. He sat in the lobby and ate the whole thing. That's it. Another one. Woman wanted the inner fluffy part of the bread removed, leaving only the hollowed out shells of the hoagie, and filled them with mayonnaise and toasted.
I'm sensing a theme here with the mayonnaise.
Well, here's one. Tuna subbed, topped with two packages of Splenda, and then toasted so much so it was basically charcoal.
Oh, that's a bet. That's a bet. There's no way somebody orders that just to eat. That's a bet.
Well, no. Yeah. Then there's the cold cut combo topped with an entire bottle of oil. Another one had a customer who wanted just condiments. All of them.
Hmm.
All of them. So, another one said that he had a regular that would order two full bags of lettuce on his sandwich every day. Imagine 2 pounds of lettuce on bread. He would order often enough that I knew when he walked in the door just to go grab two full bags for him. How do you fit it on the sandwich?
I mean, if I'm the Subway manager, at some point you got to be like, dude, you're not going to go through 2 bags of lettuce every time this one guy comes in.
That's insane. What's the weirdest thing you've ever ordered?
I had a buddy of mine that thought himself pretty clever. So when we would go up to a counter, so some place where you could order like all kinds of different things, you know, hot dog, hamburger, all
right?
That, he'd always order a grilled cheese, hold the bread.
Oh, jeez, he's that guy.
He's that guy.
You know, I know that people like. Do you ever put anchovies on a pizza?
No.
Yeah. See,
no.
I can't do that.
No, because I'm human.
I can't
and
do that.
I have taste buds that work.
I do remember that the strangest is a personal thing. When I was a kid, my Aunt Wilma brought her 2 daughters to see us, my cousins. And my Aunt Wilma, I've talked about her. She was one of the authors of Title IX. She was a national president for the NOW. She was the national president for the National Organization of Women. My aunt was a brilliant woman, but she made my dad, who was very liberal, look like Barry Goldwater. That's my standard line. My aunt was out there. Now, she would probably shake her head at where things have gone, but she had convinced her children that pizza was a crust with mashed potatoes, gravy, peas, green beans, vegetables on top.
She should do jail time.
So they came to visit us.
Publicly.
My mom said, we're just going to order pizzas for everybody, all the kids. And so we get these pizzas, and we're salivating, right?
Yeah.
And we open the box up, and my cousins are like, what's that? Well, that's a pepperoni pizza. No, it's not. And they were just dumbfounded. And when we broke the news, yeah, this is what pizza is. What have you... And they told us? I think we ruined those kids, like, forever.
I promise you they never trusted their mom again.
Not on pizza, they didn't.
I guarantee that was tainted from that point forward. Mom, why does this happen? Blah, blah, blah. I don't believe you. Prove it.
What are the chocolate chip cookies you've been serving us? Let's do news. Come back with more on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Show with Preston Scott.
Chewing gum online, eh? I hope you brought enough for everybody.
On WFLA.
Okay! 36 minutes after the hour. Morning Show with Preston Scott. Isn't it interesting how Kamala Harris has totally gotten past her belief that Joe Biden sexually assaulted?
I know, that's a thing I can't get over.
And now is just praising his skills sharpness as well, never mind.
What a great man.
Tonight's going to be interesting. I don't know if it's going to be a train wreck that you just can't take your eyes off of.
That's what I'm betting on. That's what I said. I told you before we started, I've never been more excited about a presidential debate.
There will be no handshake, no elbow, you know, thing, no fist shake, nothing like that, no fist pounding. They're going to walk out without masks. They're going to be distanced, obviously, and there you go. The debate's going to be on. You'll be able to listen to it on both these radio stations that we are on, one in Panama City, 94.5 WFLA, and the debate starts at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. You'll also be able to listen to it on 100.7 WFLA, and there will be 1 hour of pre-debate coverage. Now, I will not vouch for that hour. I have no idea.
I have no idea what that's about to be.
It's going to come from iHeart and our Tampa station. I forget the name of the guy that's doing the coverage. I will just tell you that I will just kind of take a wait-and-see approach to what that coverage is like. The debate, though, if you're away from TV, because I do think TV offers something in this type of platform, but if you can't watch TV, then obviously listen to the debate, but the body language and things like that matters. You know, if you go back to the history of these debates, the televised debate started with Nixon-Kennedy. And you know, it's kind of a shame that people forget that not only was Richard Nixon just a nervous guy, he had a propensity to perspire. And that's not a sin. It's not necessarily, it wasn't a harbinger of things to come for him. I mean, he made grievous mistakes as president. He also made some foreign policy brilliant moves as president. But he made absolute mistakes that he paid for appropriately. But let's precede all of that. The presidential debates of 1960, in fact, September of 1960, everyone forgets. They talk about him dabbing perspiration off of his forehead and looking nervous. And he had a terrible bout of the flu in the days ahead of that debate. He was sick as could be. And so, you know, you had Jack Kennedy, very younger, looked good on camera, and that was that. I mean, a lot of people will tell you that race was over with that first presidential debate, because all of a sudden Jack Kennedy was the, I mean, oh. And he's got this lovely wife and these young children, and America was enamored with the idea of this young family in the White House. We certainly don't have that this time around. We got two old men. But we'll talk a little bit more about some of the debates. I'm going to take calls next hour. If you could ask one question, what question would you ask and of whom?
Ooh.
You could only ask one question. Would you ask it of Trump or would you ask it of Biden? And what would that question be? We'll take your calls next hour. I'm going to ask Bill Zimpfer that same thing. Bill joins us at the bottom of the next hour. 40 minutes past Tuesday on the Morning Show with Preston Scott.
You don't have to love him, just like him on Facebook at Preston Scott Show.
Does it go anywhere? It is now becoming news. It looks as though Project Veritas, James O'Keefe, we've had James on the show a couple times over the years, has hit something that is getting attention. I've posted two different videos in the last 2 days on the blog page of in essence, a Somali based vote buying, ballot buying scam going on outside Minneapolis, where Ilhan Omar is the congressional representative. It's all on tape. They have guys openly bragging on tape and undercover tape of guys buying ballots, paying people. It is got the attention of everybody except the Attorney General in Minnesota, Keith Ellison, the Islamist who seemingly just doesn't have much interest in it. U.S. Department of Justice is apparently looking into it. Minneapolis Police Department's looking into it. They have guys on tape openly talking about the scam, and it's not really, it's a criminal enterprise and receiving money. And I mean, they're openly talking about it because they know it's illegal, but they're getting money. $800 per ballot, $200 per ballot. And they're ballot harvesting. They're filling all this stuff out. They tell people, okay, put your name and your final four, your social. This is all on tape. And when I pick it up, I'm going to give you $200. And then they fill out the vote. And it's connected. The assertion is, and these are people talking. They don't know they're being recorded as they're talking. They're talking very openly about the work of Ilhan Omar. They control all of her people, according to this expose. And right now I got two parts of it on my blog page. They control who's sitting counting the ballots. They control who's in the precincts. They fill out ballots for people. They have everything. They got everything covered. And they say the judges are on the take as well. All I can tell you is you can look at it, you can see it, you can decide for yourself. I've got a link to the story, I've got video clips, and it goes back to there is, and in the case of Ilhan Omar, a Palestinian, a lot of money living in this country, is bankrolling her and others like her in order to get funding cut from Israel. They don't want any money going to Israel. There's a bigger plan at stake here. And Ilhan Omar is very anti-Israel. Has been from the get-go. So if you're wondering, you know, there is a massive effort here. And understand, one of the ways that you cause things to get done is you do so much at one time that you can't stop all of it. So some of it gets through. For example, in Florida, Ashley Moody is investigating Mike Bloomberg raising and paying $16 million in fines and restitutions for 32,000 felons to help them be eligible to vote. In a memo, we know to win Florida, we need to persuade, motivate, and add new votes to the Biden column. This means we need to explore all avenues for finding the needed votes when so many votes are already determined. The memo goes on to, in essence, offer to pay fines and restitution from a guy who is a Democratic presidential candidate. That is the quintessential definition of a bribe. It is receiving something materially in exchange for voting.
Would that mean that every time he did that, it would be one count?
It conceivably could be. So we'll see where this all leads. But just put all this together, folks, and now you understand why. Don't vote by mail. Vote in person. 46 minutes after the hour. It's the morning show.
You're there quickly and safely. Traffic and weather on the 10s. It's the morning show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
All right, 51, almost 52 minutes after the hour here. Yeah, I got a text here from a friend, and all kinds of text messages rolling in. Your vote-by-mail ballot is on the way. Your personalized voting guide is also ready. Want to see it now? And the person replied, so we're voting twice? Folks, this is a debacle. This is an absolute debacle. And all I can ask you is to be informed. And there's no shortage of information. You know, in Pennsylvania, the FBI is investigating. It's not the size. It's the occurrence. 9 ballots for President Trump have been found in a dumpster. Mail workers saw the ballots. Dumped them, I guess. I mean, it's the FBI is investigating. It's a story all over. The mainstream media is trying to undercut it, but it's an issue. We've turned mail-in balloting into something it's just never meant to be. Honest and truly, mail-in ballots, other than the every now and then a race decided by, 15 ballots or votes in some small community somewhere, that was just to make sure that the people that were out of the country or traveling and away from home knew that their vote counted, by golly. It wasn't ever meant to conduct a national election. It's just not meant to do that. It if you will, it's taking your stock, you know, pickup truck, your F-150, and asking it to haul a bulldozer. You know, it's not meant to do that.
Yeah.
It just isn't. It can haul things, just not that big. It you'll pull the transmission, it just won't work. And that's what we're asking our mail system to do with this election. And so, you know, and look, I'm saying this from the perspective of, I believe with all my heart Donald Trump's going to win by a margin that is substantial. I really do. I think there are a lot of Democrats that cannot bring themselves to vote for Donald Trump or for Joe Biden, knowing what's controlling him. They know. If Joe Biden had been, malarkey Joe Biden, he'd have gotten a lot of those votes. But they know Joe's just not right. And I think, honestly, I hope I'm wrong that he's not right. I hope he's fine. I hope he's not got the onset of dementia, but he's showing all the symptoms. And they've got him hiding for a reason. Kamala Harris openly talking about, I mean, talk about a Freudian slip. The Harris administration with Joe Biden. The Harris administration? Excuse me? I've never heard a vice president make that slip of the tongue, ever.
No.
Not a vice presidential candidate, never. Anyway, you know there are bets that you can make. There's a betting service on the debate tonight.
Oh, I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, you. It's called the Fox Bet Super 6. Free-to-play app, focuses on sports usually, but it allows you to pick 6 different phrases or words. Yeah, 6 questions about occurrences and phrases that will likely come up during the debate. Prizes awarded for players most successful answering the 6 questions. For example, will President Trump use Sleepy Joe? How often will Biden say malarkey? Great stuff, man. That's the stuff that makes me interested.
Is Corn Pop going to be there?
Believe it or not, we're already into hour number 2 of the morning show with Preston Scott. Good morning, I'm Preston. Over there is Dallas Rogers in Studio 1A. I'm here in Studio 1B. Phone lines are open. Simple question. Let's do a little debate prep of our own. What question would you ask either of the candidates? And so I'm asking you to tell me who would you ask a question of if you could have one question in tonight's debate. Would you direct the question at Joe Biden? Would you direct the question at President Donald Trump? And what would that question be? 850-205-9352. It's 850-205-9352. Randy sent me a text. He said, I'm listening from Asheville. I'd ask Trump what his reaction was when he found out Obama-Biden campaign obtained a fraudulent FISA warrant to tap his phones. What was his reaction? Good question. What about you? I've set aside some time here because I think it's important that you have some expectations. Whether your exact question is asked by Chris Wallace tonight, there are some things going on tonight that I really like. One is no spin room. After the debate, there is no spin room. There's no group of lackeys for either side that are going around talking and hobnobbing and, you know, it's none of that. But I think it's important that you have expectations. And I think you establish those expectations by having some questions of your own. Richard, thanks for calling in. What would you ask and of whom?
I would ask Biden, what is going on with his son in Russia? I mean, this is being very quiet. I'm going to go because I know y'all are busy, but that's what I want to know.
All right, Richard, thanks very much. Yeah, will Chris Wallace go there in open back and forth? And I don't know the exact format, whether they're going to allow the candidates to ask questions of each other. I hope they do. That is top on my list. Rob, what about you? Who would you ask a question of, and what would it be?
Hey, good morning. September 27th, 2019, Joe Biden bragging at the CFR meeting. It's on video. It's been YouTube hits millions of times. How exactly can he deny that he did not do what he's been accused of doing when that video is so obvious?
And you're talking about the video where he is admitting to getting on a plane and taking U.S. aid if action's not taken against an attorney general, in essence, in Ukraine.
Yes, sir, when he threatens to withhold military aid because in order to force them to fire the prosecutor.
Yeah, thanks very much. That's right there where I would want to go. I mean, he's right. It is on tape. He openly on TV bragged about that. Let's get one more here, and then we'll keep moving. Call in 850-205-9352. Earl, what's your question, and who would you ask it of?
Well, my question is this. If I'm not asking of Biden, and it would be to Jimi Hendrix. Hey, Joe, where you been? You been downtown with that woman on your hand. Where you been, Joe? That's what I'd ask him. Because Trump's been out there politicking, shaking hands, how you doing? And Joe, where's he been? In the bunker. Where you been, Joe? That's what I'd ask you. And I'm being serious. I'm going to have fun with this here debate.
Are you watching?
Yes, sir. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to sit there and watch it and have fun, eat me some popcorn, and smoke me a cigar.
Attaboy, Earl. Extra points for saying cigar.
Cigar. I love Earl.
Monique, you're next. Then George. Just 70 seconds. Stay with me. We have a couple lines open, 850-205-9352. The debate tonight. What are your expectations? I'm asking you to pull those out of yourself by asking, what one question would you ask and of whom? Coming up next, more calls on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Show with Preston Scott.
Guess what? I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Pre-debate coverage begins here on WFLA. 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central is when the debate starts. Pre-debate coverage begins 1 hour earlier, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. So be tuning in right here if you'd like to listen to the debate versus watch. I would advise watching if you get the opportunity. You might be one of those people that you got to work, and so you're just going to have to listen in. But if you just can only listen, we're here for you. We've got the debate set and ready to go. We have one line open, 850-205-9352, 850-205-WFLA. Monique, thanks for calling in. Yes. Thanks for being patient. First, who are you asking your question of?
It's Joe Biden.
And what do you want to know?
I would say, Joe Biden, you told me I would not be black enough unless I voted for you. So exactly what is it you're going to do for the African-American community, and why hasn't it taken you 47 years to do it?
Ooh, snap.
Mic drop. Oh, yeah.
Well done, Monique. Good question. Are you going to be watching tonight?
Yes, me and my whole family and my kids. I'm letting them. We're all going to be watching tonight.
Thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Let's go to George. George, what's the question and to whom?
It's to Biden, and Monique stole my thunder, but I'll go on. I'll say you've had 47 years, aide to vice president. You haven't fixed anything. You've actually made things worse. What's going to change now? But since Monique kind of hit on that, I'd ask him, well, your vice president said that you were a racist and that she believed the accusations by Tara Reid. Do you believe her, or do you think she's a liar?
Yeah, I think there's opportunities there to box him in, George. Thanks very much. With Kamala Harris, you know, how is it that your vice presidential pick has suddenly found no problem with working with you when she believed the accusations made by those who claimed that you sexually assaulted women?
I think he's got a real good point asking Joe. Well, so what? She said that, and now she's saying something different. So, do you believe her, Joe?
Let's talk to Eddie. Hi, Eddie. Thanks for calling in. What's your question and to whom?
My question is to Joe Biden. He said on one of his campaign commercials that he will protect us from all enemies, seen and unseen. Well, we had Americans die on sovereign soil in Benghazi while they watched it on closed circuit TV. So that's my question to Joe Biden.
Okay. Thank you, Eddie. Appreciate that. Yeah, we've never had an accounting of Benghazi, have we? Rick, what's your question and to whom?
Well, there's beat to Mr. Trump, but first I got to pile on a little bit. You know, Joe Biden being in Congress for 47 years, he's been in Congress more years than Mr. Trump has been president in months. The number of months is up to Mr. Trump has been. Think about that. So, my question would be to Mr. Trump, can you please chronicle the course of the COVID actions that you've taken, closing, you know, travel to China and Europe, and the blowback you got, you know, being xenophobic. Please, you know, go over that in detail.
Thanks very much, Rick. Appreciate that. What about you? Do you have? Is there a particular area, Dallas, you'd want to touch on?
No, I have questions for either one would be different, but I'm with her about the Joe Biden. The question I have for Joe Biden would be, you've got a person that is outwardly in the press stated with no question what she meant, that she believes the women that accused you, and she said all these other things. Now she's saying that you're the greatest thing. So is she lying or not? Which one is she lying about? And then for President Trump, I would just say, you know, look, man, how have you gotten through doing what you've done in the face of this overwhelming hate that comes your way?
If I were a panelist tonight, and again, we're taking more calls. If you'd like to jump in, 850-205-9352. I've got one more segment, 850-205-9352. I'll tell you what, when we come back, I'll take more calls. If you want to call in, you can time it. We've got a little bit of a break here. You can come back in. If not, I'm going to share what I would ask of each of them. And you can take it for whatever it's worth, which is nothing, because I'm not going to be asking questions tonight. Chris Wallace will. And Chris enjoys the role. Trust me. It'll be interesting. 17 minutes, almost 17 minutes now after the hour.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
Dude, yes!
And iHeart's radio station.
Morning show with Preston Scott. Debate coverage begins 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central on these radio stations. Debate starts 1 hour later. We're asking you, if you could ask one question, what would you ask and of whom? Go back to the phone lines. Chris is standing by. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Preston.
What do you think?
So I think I would ask Vice President Biden how he can expect the American people to believe that he truly wishes to end systematic oppression, so-called, when he has a history of clearly personal benefit, including his son, Hunter, and how they've so obviously benefited from this system that he helped build, as everyone else has so eloquently pointed out, for the last 50 or some odd years.
Thanks very much, Chris. Let's go to Terrell. Terrell, what do you think?
Yeah, good morning. I just would like to ask both candidates, would they commit to a debate again tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow night without any prep and not without knowing what the questions or topics would be?
Boy, that's my kind of debate. Let's just sit down and talk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No prep, no talking points. Let's see how you think on your feet.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Terrell, thanks very much. I lost the name on line 4. Mike, how are you?
Good morning, Preston. I'd like to ask Joe Biden, with all the millions of dollars that he's done spent on this TV commercials, that he's done told all these lies to the American people, is his vice president pick going to be in lockstep with his lies? If not, because if he does win and they put him out the pasture, they're going to ask her, and she got to say is, well, I didn't promise that. Joe Biden promised that stuff.
Yeah, is your vice president bound to the same platform that you are?
Exactly.
Yeah, Mike, good one. You know, obviously you'd have to be careful in how you say certain things. You can't accuse somebody of being a liar unless you have evidence of it. But I get your gist. I don't disagree. Mac, what about you?
I would ask Joe Biden, can he name one original thought he ever had without plagiarizing it from someone else or someone else telling him to think that?
Thank you very much, Mac. Final question here goes to John. Hey, John, what do you think?
Good morning, Preston. I would ask Joe Biden, do you believe that our founding, our founders, and our founding documents are among the greatest ever created? And if so, what would your administration do to move us back toward the limited central government that it those envision?
Thank you very much. Some good questions here. I can't say I've narrowed mine down to one. I'm going to violate the rules that I set forth in this entire exercise here.
He who maketh the rules
can change them. I would be asking Joe to define fair share. He has a story saying that he would only raise taxes on those making $400,000 a year or more so that they pay their fair share. I want him to define what that means. What does fair share mean? I would want him to absolutely account for his son's placement in China and Ukraine with no expertise on various boards, being paid millions, and to account for his actions of intervention as vice president, and that he had asked for the opportunity to be the United States government's liaison to China and Ukraine. Isn't that coincidental? He was the point man for Obama in both, and his son profited by both. I would ask both of them if a socialist, if a Marxist should be allowed to run for office, federal office in the United, any office in the United, any elected office. I would precede that question by stating, since that part of the oath of office is to defend and uphold the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, would you support a constitutional amendment that limits those running for elected office to those that believe in the Constitution? And I would ask the president, are there any actions that you have taken as president of the United States that you regret? I would give him the opportunity to say yes or no. And if he were smart, he would say, I wish from time to time I'd use more restraint in my responses to certain things.
Twitter.
But what would Bill Zimfer ask and of whom? I'll ask him next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Show with Preston Scott.
Does Barry Manilow know that you raid his wardrobe?
On WFLA.
News team! Assemble!
Show number 4334 of The Morning Show with Preston Scott. And standing by with us from the remote studio location is the one and the only Bill Zimfer, ready to cover the presidential debate tonight. It will be held in Cleveland. What will the setting be like, Bill? I understand no spin zone afterwards. What about the staging and so forth?
Yeah, this will be at Case Western Reserve University, and there will be an audience, but a small audience of fewer than 100 people who will all have to go through testing and everything. So there, expect some audience reaction, but not what you might normally expect during a debate. Also, Chris Wallace, the moderator, is there. The two candidates will be up on stage, 6 feet apart from each other, no handshakes, no elbow bumps, anything like that. They will not wear masks at all, and it's from there on it's 90 minutes full out, no breaks, and Chris Wallace has six topics that he would like to cover, but he's got the toughest job of the night to keeping the candidates on track here, because even though there are issues that are going to be reserved in 15-minute segments, so whether it be Supreme Court or COVID-19, economy, and others, you know that each candidate is going to want to get some other messages in there as well. So Chris Wallace probably has the toughest job of the night.
Are they going to allow, will Chris allow either candidate, both candidates, I should say, to ask each other questions?
I don't think so. I think that this is going to be, they'll bring up the issues. Wallace will ask the questions. He will not fact check or anything. And I don't think that there will be kind of a quiz going back and forth between the two. I think it'll be Chris Wallace directing questions to the candidates and them able to answer the questions if, you know, however they choose to. Now, if they answer their question with a question to the other candidate, there may be an opportunity to respond.
Bill Zimfer with us this morning on The Morning Show. Bill, we talked earlier in the show about the undecideds. Are there really undecideds out there to be persuaded by this event?
You know, supposedly there are. And I say supposedly because the general feeling of this is like a football game where you're rooting for your favorite team. You're not sitting there deciding, okay, which one is my favorite team?
Right.
That people have already decided. However, I think that there is still that general hesitancy when it comes to Joe Biden. And what people are going to be looking for tonight, and I'm not trying to be flip or anything, but what people will be looking for first off is Joe Biden all there?
Yeah.
Does he have a command of the facts? Is he able to go through numbers without botching them like he's done pretty recently? And I think that's one thing that people will be looking at here who might be a little hesitant about jumping on board Joe Biden.
If you could ask one question tonight, if you could sit next to Chris Wallace and you had the authority to pen one question, what would the question be and to who?
Yeah, I would have a question for President Trump, and I would preface this question by saying that your answer cannot be nothing, okay? And here would be the question. If you could go back to January, what would you have done differently? I wouldn't ask what did you do wrong. I would just say, what would you do differently? And your answer can't be nothing. That would just be interesting to hear.
As always, Bill, thanks very much for the time. I know we'll be talking about this, I'm guessing, tomorrow. What do you think?
Yeah, I can pretty much guarantee it.
Thank you, Bill.
See ya.
Bill Zimfer. With us this morning on The Morning Show. He'll be among the many paying attention to what... I want to know how late Bill stays up, because he's up as early as I am. So how much of this thing is he going to be able to take in before retiring for the night?
Well, he may do the same thing that a lot of people used to do, and that would be, you know, he'll go to bed earlier than normal and get up earlier than normal.
Oh, now that's a possibility. I could try to do that. I'm not good at it because when I take a nap in the afternoon, I'm in a fog the rest of the day.
It's brutal. You got to get used to it.
40 minutes after the hour. Come back with a big story in the press box, more on the debate and more. We still have a manly minute still to come in the next 20 minutes here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Justice and the American way. Like Superman, only with a microphone. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
It looks as though Thursday at 8:05, I will be joined by John Morgan on this program. And we will be discussing the minimum wage amendment that he is proudly supporting and putting his money behind. They know, I've disclosed to them, that I am a very adamant opponent of the amendment. Did I say Amendment 4? Amendment 2 on the ballot. Not the Second Amendment. It's just Amendment 2. It's Ballot Amendment 2. That you are voting on. And I beg of you, don't do it. Don't force the state of Florida down the path of New York City, Seattle, and these other places that are mandating a minimum wage and watching their economies in sectors crumble. I'm very well aware of John's beliefs on this and his arguments. It'll be an opportunity, as opposed to, you know, when you see an article and there's one in Tallahassee Reports on it, you know, the reporter asks John for his response to this argument, and then there's no counter to that response. And that's where things will get a little bit different based on how much time he decides to go. We'll set aside as much as 15 minutes, as little as 10. So we'll see. We'll see where it leads. And that's Thursday scheduled tentatively right now on the program. The debate tonight, it'll be interesting to see if anything remarkable happens. Always remember this, no matter what the mainstream media spins the next morning. First, there is nothing. I was watching the coverage of the 2016 debates. I didn't watch the debates again. I wanted to watch what the media was saying before and after. And it didn't matter what Trump said. He was going to be panned. He was going to be lampooned. He was going to be made fun of. Oh, I think Donald Trump made a mistake with the voters here. I think this will be a big disconnect. I listened to all of them, and all of it was wrong. All the analysis was completely 100% wrong. I have had one email. I had one comment from somebody that messaged me saying, or put something on a Facebook post that they weren't voting for Trump this time that they did last time. And they weren't this time. And if I take this person at their word, and I do, that's the only person I know of that's taking that opinion. And why you would move from the results that we had, regardless of the personality flaws of the president, the results that this country had versus the certainty of what's to come with the failed policies of Democrats. And they are. They are failed policies. They don't know how to run an economy. Never have. They are the harbingers of division because that's what they play to. But tonight's debate, just remember, no matter what happens, the mainstream media is going to spin everything and make you think that the country at large is moving away from Trump. Don't believe it for a second. Increasingly, have you seen what happened with Black Lives Matter lately? Everybody's picking up on it. I've got at least a half dozen blacks commenting on YouTube clips about how suddenly BLM has removed what they believe off their webpage. Their in essence, their statement of faith, what they believe, what they stand for, is gone. They've cleansed it. I'll explain a little bit more about that here quickly in a second on The Morning Show.
Listen to your opinions and tell you you're wrong. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Alrighty, 51 minutes after the hour here on The Morning Show. I would absolutely be asking Joe Biden tonight to go on the record about any number of platform issues that the extreme left wing of the party is, I believe, pushing him to. I would ask him about the packing of the Supreme Court, the expansion of the court. I would get him on the record. Do you believe in packing the Supreme Court and expanding the number of justices? Yes or no? I would be asking him about the Green New Deal. I would be asking him about the tax policies that, and without framing it the way that I'm framing it, I would be asking him about the tax policies that he's espousing. And again, I would ask him, what does fair share mean? I would pin him on all of those things. I wouldn't have to ask long questions. I would ask very precise questions. I think that's key.
I think Monique had a really good point. She says, when saying, you know, what are you going to do differently if you get in office that you just haven't been able to do for the last 47 years of being in the position? What's changed?
Yeah, there's a litany of things. You know, Black Lives Matter, I would pin him down on that.
Yeah.
I was mentioning, I was listening to Jason Whitlock. Whitlock's got just a brilliant 11-minute video clip on Black Lives Matter. And he was taking the position I was taking on Bron, LeBron James, and others. Ben Watson, who is an avowed Christian, who is just wrong on the issue of Black Lives Matter because he didn't bother to find out what they believed in and what they stand for. And so Jason Whitlock's pointing out that what others are, that they've cleansed their sight. They've pulled it from their sight. But you see, others around the world got wind of all of this. I don't know if you noticed the Premier League. We're, my sons and I watch Premier League soccer. Mm-hmm. I've become a big fan because my son, when he lived in Europe, became a big soccer fan.
Yeah.
Lived in Barcelona, and then he lived in London and became a huge Premier fan. Lived near Liverpool, became a Liverpool fan. And so, maybe he didn't live near Liverpool, but he became a Liverpool fan. And so I've become a fan, too. It's something we enjoy together. And he pointed out, he said, have you noticed the patches are gone? They're no longer affiliated with Black Lives Matter. They now have a position of end racism. I'm good with that. I completely agree with that idea. That's their position. The Premier League is totally cut from Black Lives Matter. It's now end racism. Good.
Yep.
Right direction. We all agree with that message. We all agree with that message.
Yep. 100%.
Because it's getting out what Black Lives Matter has really, what it really stands for. And so that's a good thing as we now move to the top of the hour and a manly minute. Here on the morning show with Preston Scott.
Why, yes.
You could start humming it. With your musical acumen. Manly, manly, manly. Time for a manly minute. Male by birth, man by choice. These are things you need to teach your son. Whether you're a single parent, whether you have a traditional household, make sure your little boy learns these skills. I got this from a story. Utah fisherman guilty of cheating at Lake Powell fishing tournament. It's a $2,500 first prize, and they wanted to win so badly, they used fish caught in another lake in their way in to win. But they were caught. And so I'm okay, so they got caught. They're disgraced, and that's good. But here's the bottom line. Teach your son in little games, little board games, little things that you do when you're playing, don't cheat. One of the reasons I love the game of golf is because golf is a game of honor. It is, you call the rules on yourself. You penalize yourself. Now you can say all you want that some of the rules are really weird. Like you're addressing the ball, you got your club behind it, the ball moves. You didn't do anything to impact that, but that's a stroke. That's a penalty. Yep, it moved. I need to call that on myself. No one else saw it. Now, increasingly, cameras do see it. But the bottom line is, teach your son to not cheat. That way you can say, now you're a man. When we come back, we're going to change gears. Bob Ward joins me from the Florida Council of 100, concerned about the educational rigor in Florida. That's next on The Morning Show. Number three, The Morning Show with Preston Scott, Tuesday, September 29th. Show number 4334, Dallas Rogers over there, Studio 1A. I am here in Studio 1B. The debate tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Coverage begins. The debate begins 1 hour later. You listen to it on the radio, and tomorrow we'll obviously be talking about it. I wanted to spend some time here talking about something that should matter to every single person listening. I got a note a couple weeks ago from the Florida Council of 100. They've got a study showing a rigor gap in Florida classrooms. It doesn't surprise me one bit, not at all. I've talked about education on this show for the 19 years I've done it. It has been a very important piece of the discussion on this radio program, my concerns with our education in Florida, what we're offering K-12. And joining me is Bob Ward. He's the president and CEO of the Florida Council of 100. Bob, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Preston. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
First, snapshot, Florida Council of 100. What is it?
Sure, absolutely. So the Florida Council of 100 was formed back in 1961, and it was an idea of the governor at that time, a gentleman by the name of Ferris Bryant. His concept was to take the business acumen and apply it to problems to Florida's most difficult problems. So we don't really exist to solve businesses' problems. It's a way for businesses in the state about 140 businesses to give back to the state of Florida by trying to help boost the economic growth of Florida and also all of its citizens.
What caused you to want to zero in on the educational rigor inside our state, the curriculum, and what kids are learning?
Yeah, absolutely. So about 3 years ago, we embarked on a study to look at a long-term plan for education over, say, a 20-year period. What does the state need to do to basically move in the right direction, continue to be more competitive with other states, and to provide students and parents and teachers with basically the tools that they need to get their jobs done? And so we traveled around the state, met with a number of teachers, school officials, looking at best practices in about 25 schools. And oftentimes we were hitting schools that were not necessarily, in very wealthy areas. They were the schools that had high free and reduced lunch programs, but they were still exceeding expectations. And talking to teachers, administrators, and students, and parents from those schools, what we found are a number of set standards and expectations that those individuals felt needed to be carried on into the future to make Florida successful. So that caused us to embark on basically establishing some strong educational standards. One of those was meeting highest expectations. And so that caused us to think about what does grading look like as it relates to Florida's end-of-course exams. And that started us down this trail.
How much has the pandemic impacted this? Because we've been told flat out, kids were told they were going to pass. Teachers were told you're going to pass your students, whether they're up to the standards on the grade work that they're doing or not.
Yeah, exactly. So we think that it's probably the pandemic has probably made the situation of rigor gap even worse because of the relaxed grading standards. You know, there's been no exact study that's been done at this point, but we do know that the relaxed grading standards and just the quality of the, you know, distance learning experienced by the students had mixed results. And we heard that from school district officials, teachers, parents, and students.
Bob Ward with me, Florida Council of 100. He's CEO, president, talking about the education that's happening for K-12 inside our state, whether we're really preparing kids for the next step, whether it's higher ed or whether it's vocational schools. We're gonna expand this a little bit more when we come back. One more segment. Bob, stand by. 70-second check of weather and traffic here on The Morning Show.
Show with Preston Scott.
60% of the time, it works every time.
On WFLA.
It is a very important topic. I think a lot of parents feel really helpless to deal with it. Bob Ward with us, Florida Council of 100, talking about the rigor gap inside Florida schools. Bob, do you agree? Do parents feel somewhat helpless and disconnected from, you know, really getting some meaningful solutions on the challenges that and it predates the pandemic? We've had this issue for a while now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, interestingly enough, if you talk to parents and students as we did, you know, we found that there are a large portion that are simply looking for what is the information that I need to know in order to either be successful as a student or to be successful as a parent in helping guide my student towards good educational choices. So we know that's happening. There are 84% of Florida high school students reported that they wanted to pursue post-secondary education in their future, and this was through a Youth Truth survey. 79% believe that their students will earn a 2 to 4 year degree, you know, moving forward in the system. Yet, even with those factors, we know that a national survey found that only about half of the 12th grade students felt that their schools had helped them develop the skills necessary to be college ready. So that's not good enough. We still have a long way to go. I think education in our state has come a long distance, starting back from the early days of Governor Bush and moving forward to this current governor, but there's still a lot more room for improvement.
What has the Commissioner of Education, Richard Corcoran, said, or how has he responded to this, if you've gotten any response at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did talk to the commissioner pretty extensively and several of his chancellors pretty extensively about the report. They've embraced the findings. I think all of us are trying to figure out exactly what the rigor gap means. In other words, what are the root causes? And so there's more study that's going to need to be done. But we're trying to encourage the commissioner to actually appoint a blue ribbon task force made up of teachers, parents, administrators and others, basically the experts in Florida's education system, to help come up with the findings to resolve this problem.
Do you have any inclination, one, two, three things that you think the data points to?
So we think it points to a number of things, and the study wasn't really to determine yet what the exact solutions need to be, but part of it is raising stakeholder awareness. For teachers, that means giving them the tools necessary to determine how the rigor gap compares with their own grading. And so one of the ideas is to provide a simple report to each teacher so that they can see the end-of-course exams compared to the grade that they gave their student. Districts do this differently. Not every district's the same in terms of the information it provides. For parents and students, we feel like, you know, parents have told us time and time again, Preston, all they want is simple, easy to understand information to be able to make good educational choices for their students. For students, to some degree, we're failing them when we're not providing them with the skills and the knowledge of what's going to be expected for them at the, you know, at the college and the university level. So part of it is resolving that. And then one of the big issues, of course, are just teacher prep programs, making sure that when these student teachers are learning the importance of how to do their job, that grading is made a very definite and key aspect of that, particularly as it relates to the state standards. The standards are not going to go away. They're going to be with us for a long time. We support the idea of standards, but you have to be able to test and understand whether or not those standards are being met.
Bob, thanks for what you're doing, and keep us in the loop as things develop. I appreciate the time this morning.
Thanks, Preston. Have a good day.
Thank you, Bob Ward with the Florida Council of 100 and their study showing what I think a lot of us know. I will tell you, there is an underemphasis on parenting.
Yeah.
There's a huge underemphasis in our state in parenting and parent accountability here.
Yeah, and the worst part about it is I think there's a difference between responsibility, accepting responsibility, and accepting blame, because people like to blame parents when it's just a responsibility of parents to instill the right values and teach.
Yeah, man, your kid, read to them.
Yeah.
Read to your kid before they get to kindergarten. Get them reading along with you when they're, you know, in the womb. Seriously.
Be the person you want your kid to be. Be an example.
16 minutes after the hour in the morning show with Preston Scott.
FLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
Hey, so here we go.
An iHeart's radio station.
Twenty-two minutes after the hour. You watch the debate tonight, huh? Yeah, I will. I don't know. Maybe I'll watch a little bit of it. Maybe I'll take a nap and watch a little bit of it. I don't know. If I take a nap, it's going to be like a nap at 7 o'clock when I'm done prepping, and then I'll wake up in a couple of hours and watch the debate and then go back to bed. That might be the way that I do it. I don't know. I thought this was almost, wait, what? Kind of story here. Portland police arrested over 30 this past weekend. And as Kate Brown, the governor, announced that she has asked law enforcement officials to investigate any alleged incidents involving their officers going too far and harassing people unfairly. Here's what's important about these arrests. They've arrested people from California, Canada, Minnesota, Washington, Texas. This is important. The reason why I think it's important is because you can begin to lay the groundwork for the organized importation and funding of illegal activities. And you know what that would be? That could potentially be a RICO prosecution. See, by establishing that these people are coming from all parts of the country and are being brought there and being compensated for the sole purpose of creating disruptions that are illegal. Let me go back. I did some digging here. The Racketeer-Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. It's called the RICO Act. United States Code, passed in 1970. The goal then was to eliminate the effects of organized crime, as in the mafia, the gangs. However, today it isn't used often against the mafia. It is often a claim in federal court asserted by victims of white-collar crime such as mail and wire fraud. However, when you start dealing with people like George Soros and his organizations that are funding these kinds of actions, not only do you have a basis for RICO prosecutions, you actually might have basis for treason. The attempted overthrow of a government. I mean, if you really dig deep enough, it's kind of what is at work here. And that circles back to my belief and contention that socialists like Ilhan Omar, like Bernie Sanders, like Rashida Tlaib, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and any others, whether it's on a local level, a state level, or a federal level, socialists, communists, Marxists should not be allowed to run for office. If you think about it, it becomes something that makes more and more sense. I have had more people come up to me in recent years to talk about two things. One, change Martin Luther King Day to Civil Rights Day. I have a lot of black listeners that say, you know, you're right. I'd not thought of that. But that makes a lot of sense. It does. It's not an insult to Dr. King. It's an embracing of what we've done with President's Day. We honor all presidents. It's not a denigration of Dr. Martin Luther King. It's embracing. There were a lot of people that contributed to the civil rights movement. We should be telling all their stories. In this light, how can a socialist pledge to uphold and defend a constitution that they inherently don't agree with? A constitutional republic is not remotely compatible with socialism or Marxism or communism. It just isn't. You shouldn't be allowed to run for office. You should be kicked out. Sorry. You're not eligible. It makes sense. 27 minutes after the hour. Come back with a big story in the press box and a small detail that was left out of a press story. We'll get to that and more. Stick around.
You, the facts. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
The Attorney General for Kentucky, Daniel Cameron, is going to release the grand jury recordings of their deliberations.
Are those something that are normally...
They're held back.
So...
Normally, it is very, very much taboo to release anything. We are admonished to not discuss ever.
Well, that's kind of my question is what's the is there a legality issue there?
He's giving the jurors permission to talk. I guess the feeling is that, you know, the public interest is such now that the truth needs to be pushed out.
And I don't disagree with that, but my question still is a legality question. What makes it illegal to talk about it if you're a grand juror? Is it just because the judge said so? And if that's the case, is it just because the judge said so that they can release it? Or what makes it a gag order?
I mean, normally a judge will issue that. As far as a grand jury, we just operated under the admonition from the get-go that nothing was discussed, period.
Okay.
That's the standard operating procedure of a grand jury.
Well, if that's yes, I get that's the SOP of the grand jury, but is it a legality issue? Is it illegal? Are you being compelled legally to not talk about it outside of the jury room?
Well, you're sworn to.
That's what I'm asking. So you're sworn to keep it a secret and not talk about it. But is that a law? Is that from the judge or is that a statute? In other words, is that written by our state legislature or is that a judge that makes it illegal?
I would guess that judges can't make laws. That it every law has its foundation.
Well, now that's not. It's not that they can't make laws.
Well, no, it is true. They can't make laws.
But they can tell you can't do this, and if you do, I'm going to put you in jail.
But it's on the basis of a law. They can't make the law.
If they say something in their courtroom and they decide that it's contempt, that is their purview.
But it is only on the basis of there being a law that exists for them to hold someone in contempt, Dallas. They can't make it up.
Right.
They
so
are
that's
prohibited.
Again, back to the beginning. My question, is there a legality issue? Where does it make it illegal to talk about it?
Well, I would guess that it's found in state law. That exists everywhere. Judges do not have the ability to make law, though there are activist judges that try to do so.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to. That's not what a judge's role is. That's why there are three separate powers: the executive, the legislative, the judicial. The judicial doesn't make law. The judicial can only act on laws that exist. That's it. So it's just an interesting development. You've got to believe that the Attorney General is very, very confident in the information that was presented to the grand jury in order to say, yeah, fine, we're going to release the deliberations. See, Ben Crump has been constantly fanning, we want the deliberations. Okay, fine. Here they are. It's always something to stir the pot. It didn't go the way you'd hoped. You know, thankfully there are people out there that are saying, you know, what happened to Breonna Taylor, it's a shame. It's a shame that anybody dies prematurely in life. But when you mix yourself up with certain types of people and certain types of actions, bad things happen. They just do. And I don't know how much more we can say that. But, you know, maybe this will calm things. Maybe what we need is the racial makeup of the grand jury and the vote. And, I mean, we are at a place now where, now see me, I wouldn't release it. Those are sacred deliberations. And you're asking questions and you're looking at evidence and you're saying, do you believe this person? How credible do you find that person? And it gets to weighing and measuring things that only those people were privy to. And now you're going to open them up to second guessing when the people that are going to do the second guessing, they didn't see the evidence. They didn't hear the evidence. This is just the deliberation of the evidence. Anyway, 40 minutes after the hour, it's the morning show.
Morning show with Preston Scott.
I say this calls for action, and now, nip it in the bud.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
A little more backstory on this decision by Daniel Cameron, the AG for Kentucky. A lawsuit was filed Monday by an unnamed juror who seeks to remain anonymous but requested that jurors be allowed to speak freely about the case. Inside the court documents, quoting, there is a compelling public interest for these proceedings to be released of a magnitude the city and the Commonwealth had never seen before that could not be confined, weaving its way across the country. The citizens of the Commonwealth have demonstrated their lack of faith in the process and proceedings in this matter and the justice system itself. And so the argument was made, well, to try to restore that, do we want to release these deliberations? And so I guess the decision has been made. So we'll see where this leads. New York Times, NPR covered the same story on Sunday. Someone caught on videotape plowing a car into a group of people. NPR, in its report, woman charged with attempted murder after driving into pro-Trump protesters. New York Times omitted what the group of people was. New York Times said nothing about the Trump supporters being the targets of a liberal activist driving a car into them attempting to kill them. New York Times left that out. Small little detail. Go back and check the coverage of, say, Charlottesville. It's amazing. It is just amazing how blatantly bad the media is. Then there's this, and I wrote on my rundown where hate resides. You may have seen the story of a former campaign manager for President Trump, Brad Parscale. He had to be Baker acted here in Florida. Threatened to harm himself on Sunday night. Police had to rush in and tackle him. Democratic Florida House of Representatives candidate Bob Lynch wrote on Twitter, F Brad Parscale. The business of separating innocent refugee babies from their parents, stripping women's rights, selling our country to the Russians, and on should take a toll. It sure did on those innocent families. Killing is Trump DeSantis' business. That's where hate resides. This guy has a mental breakdown and is about to kill himself. They talk him off the ledge, technically, figuratively, and end up having to tackle him to keep him from harming himself again. And so this guy just drops hate bombs all over and then spews the same old disproven rhetoric. Selling our country to Russians. Oh, spare me. Excuse me, who was taking money from the Russians? Exactly, Hunter Biden. Who was coordinating with the Russians? Oh, that's right. The Clinton campaign through the false dossier. Come on. But look at and listen to the hate. Who does that? You know what? For whatever troubles Brad Parscale has, he's a freaking human being. F him? We got to be better than that, people. We have to be. Thankfully, he got called out by some of his colleagues, and that's good. 46 minutes after the hour here in the morning show. Well, you wonder, are we going to have some classic lines delivered tonight in the debate? You know, I think when the age thing came up between Ronald Reagan and Fritz Mondale, I think what I loved the most about that entire sequence, you remember that line? That was, and if I were smart, I'd have it queued up. It just occurred to me. I remembered, I was going through a bunch of sound of debates over the last few weeks, Gerald Ford's classic faux pas. There's no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe. And it's like, what are you thinking, dude? And Jimmy Carter, bless his heart, it's the only thing he probably got right in his whole term as president was when he was doing the debate before he was elected. And he said, I'd like to see Mr. Ford convince Polish Americans, Czech Americans, Hungarian Americans that those countries didn't live under the supervision and control of the Soviet Union. Great line, Jimmy. And it was a great line. And it's like, and it just crushed Ford. It just made him look silly. But Reagan, 73 at the time, is asked if his age would hinder his ability to be commander in chief. And that's when he said, in essence, I will not use my opponent's youth and lack of experience against him. And it was a great line. And it was so good that even Walter Mondale just cracked up. He smiled from ear to ear and laughed and laughed and laughed, to his credit, to Walter Mondale's credit. That was just, that to me is still one of the best moments of any debate, because it was funny. It was a great quip, and both of them had a laugh. Even, you know, Reagan with his stoic kind of shake of the head looked over at him, and there was just this little crick of a smile, and Mondale's just dying over there, just laughing so hard. I hope we have moments of collegiality. I do. I don't expect them, though. I do not. I will place the over-under on the word malarkey at 1. And I think it gets said once, but if it were a betting line, I would set it at 1, and you could take the over or the under. He doesn't say it all, or he would say it multiple times. Sleepy Joe, I will set that at 2. That Sleepy Joe finds its way in there. I would set Hayden Biden in there at 1, in an over-under line. But I hope we have a substantive debate. The president should have no fears of one, and he should need no notes. All he needs to do is talk about the things that have happened that are very good for this country. Simple as that. Don't forget, tomorrow on the program, we will have post-debate coverage, to whatever extent we think it's warranted. I'm not going to promise anything. I'm not. It could be just an absolute terrible debate. It could be breathtakingly good, at which point we can't capture it anyway in the short time we have really on the show. So we'll see where it leads, and we'll react accordingly.
I'm looking for a second single release from Biden, because Hairy Legs went straight to the top of the charts, it and I did. Think we need another one. We need a follow-up.
It did.
We need a dance single.
We could have it. maybe get a little early Bryan Adams in on the flow. A lot of people don't know that backstory. Dr. Ed Moore joins us tomorrow, traveling the 50. He will be with us, though, in studio talking about that. Charlie Strickland, our personal defense segment, and then we'll, of course, weigh in on the debate. Today's show, Bob Ward with the Florida Council of 100, talking about the educational gap that they see showing up here in Florida, that kids are just not prepared. I don't disagree. I've been saying it for nearly 20 years on this show. I think we've made some good efforts and some progress in some areas, but I think common sense is really lacking. I hope that one day the Commissioner of Education follows up on his promise and actually comes on the show and we can talk about it for a while. Took a lot of your calls. What question would you ask in the debate tonight? And of whom? Some interesting calls and questions there. Bill Zimpfer joined us. He answered that same question as well, gave his thoughts on the upcoming debate. The Manly Minute, teach your son to not cheat on anything, ever. It's a great quality to have. Tomorrow we'll tee it up, do it all over again, the Wednesday edition. Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh follow. Folks, have a great day. Thanks for listening.